Hi, I'm Allison Shelton, writer and creator of the Indie Comic Reburn. You may have heard about us on Indie Comic Spotlight, thanks to Tony and Rhea. Reburn follows May, a superpowered woman who takes on the cult-like utopian society that ripped her life apart. Our comic picks up when she's ready to burn it all down. We're incredibly proud of our all-female team. Myself, artist Elise McCall, editor Jessica Patel, colorist Hillary Jenkins, and letterer Joamette Gill. Renowned comic writer and artist Kari Andrews said of Reburn, "It's an impressive debut, a violent, visceral, and emotion-fueled spectacle. A story you need to read right now." We agree. And we have hard copies and digital copies of issues 1-4 available on our website, reburncomic.com. That's reburncomic.com. Check it out.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Indie Comic Spotlight, the show where we do a deep dive into an ongoing series, which is what we have today, or a standalone graphic novel from a company other than the big two. It's the best of the rest. And today we're visiting our good friends at IDW. The last time I think we visited IDW on the show is when we did the crossover Dynamite IDW Ash versus Elvis, I believe, is when Bubba Hotep and Ash. I don't know if you guys knew this. My guests today, as part of Creator Corner, are working for IDW, and maybe they didn't even know there was an Ash versus Bubba Hotep Dynamite IDW crossover. But it was a ridiculous amount of fun. So today, though, is a Creator Corner. I was lucky enough. So Steve J. Ray, sent me a message and was like, "Hey, I got this. They should come on your show, Indie Guy." I'm like, "Thank you, Steve-O." So emails have gone back and forth. And so here I am with writer and artist for IDW's new Breath of Shadows. It's pretty awesome. I got a sneak peek, so I can't wait to talk about it. And of course, we're going to go spoiler free on these creator corners because we don't want people to be like, "Wait, I haven't even read that yet. You told me everything that happens at the end." So we are not going to do that. So welcome to Indie Comic Spotlight. Alex, Rich, thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great.
This is going to be so fun. I love, we're all nerds. Everybody who's listening to this is a nerd in some way. Geek is what our good friend Paul likes to say. So before we start getting into Breath of Shadows and how you guys met and, you know, when Alex met Rich, was it a meet cute? We'll talk about all of that. We'll find all that out as we go along. But we need to know how it was. You know, what was your comic book origin story? So, Rich, you're the writer of this. You'll paint a picture with words for us. Take us back in time. Little Rich.
Sure.
What was your first comic? Do you remember? And then go from there.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So I don't know if it was my very first comic, but the first one I really remember reading was like a old issue of the Marvel G.I. Joe. I think it was like number 4 or something like that, because when I was growing up, that was like the hot toy. And I was like, "This is all comic book." And I was like, "Oh my God." So got that. And when I was growing up, they still sold comics in newsstands. So like we would in candy stores. So like, I remember we would kind of go shopping every Saturday, go to like the supermarket. And then like my dad would give me a few bucks and I'd run over to the candy store and buy some comics. So I was like probably like a little more into Marvel than DC. Like I remember buying a lot of like Incredible Hulk and Ghost Rider, X-Men I was really into. And that was like just like my Saturday afternoons was like I'd be like kind of sitting on the floor of my room reading comics with like Kung Fu movies on the TV and stuff like that. And it just like I love them. Like they were, you know, way different than reading like, you know, like C-Spot Run and like all the other kind of stuff that like, you know, you'd read as a kid. Like, I actually feel like I learned a lot from reading comics because they kind of used a lot of vocabulary that like I wasn't familiar with. And I would like go look it up and stuff like that. So that was like kind of.
Especially if you're reading Claremont X-Men, you read all the words.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
You learn a little Russian whenever Colossus talks. You learn a little German when Nightcrawler talks.
Right.
So it was good. So then, you know, like, you know, I got older and I was reading all through like high school. And that's like when I kind of started, like, I guess, you know, like low key collecting. Like I wasn't like, you know, kind of collecting it with like an eye of like, oh, I'm going to like, you know, sell these one day and put myself through college. But it was more just like, oh, I really want to read like all of Age of Apocalypse or all of like whatever. So I would like, you know, or all of Secret Wars or whatever, you know. So I would, you know, I started like buying long boxes and had like a collection and stuff like that. And then, you know, then I kind of like fell out of it for a little bit when I was in college. But, you know, I just sort of remember there was this comic book store in Manhattan called Forbidden Planet. And it was fairly close to the areas where I'd like go hang out with my friends, like when we would like go to bars and stuff. So sometimes if I got to the area a little bit early, I would just like, you know, go in Forbidden Planet and look around and just sort of look at, they had like, you know, all the statues and stuff like that. So I'd look around there and I started seeing, I remember like very clearly seeing like an issue of Transmetropolitan and Sandman and the Invisibles and books like that. And being like, I remember like Transmetropolitan and I saw the Spider Jerusalem character and I was like, ah, oh, that's a weird looking superhero. I wonder what his deal is. You know, so I kind of picked it up and I was like flipping through it and I was like, oh, this isn't a superhero story. I think like up to that point, other than like G.I. Joe, like I had never read like a non-superhero comic. Like, I was probably aware they existed, but I didn't really kind of realize it was a thing. But it just sort of like got me reinterested in it, you know. So I started reading like Sandman, The Invisibles, Transmet, and like a lot more indie stuff that was like coming out, you know, and stuff that was like a little more, I guess you could call it like mature, you know, like, you know, like not so much about like, you know, guys punching each other and, you know, shouting German and Russian or
right.
But but that was kind of, I think, what, when I started reading those comics is when I started getting interested in writing them. But it was still a number of years before I actually kind of took the steps I needed to get into writing, because I had always kind of wanted to write, but I was really more thinking like I wanted to write like a fantasy or science fiction novel or something. So I spent a lot of years kind of doing like false starts at that, because it is a lot of work and, you know, it's hard. And I would kind of have an idea and get started and like run out of steam by like, you know, 20 pages in or something like that. So anyway, and then just like one day kind of hit me. I was like, you know, I love comic books, you know, people write these, like I want to write, like maybe I should try writing comic books. So I started reading scripts. I took a couple of online classes where I was writing like short comics, like 5-page scripts. And then one of the ones that I wrote was called Gutter Magic. And I decided, I was like, hey, you know, like I have a little money set aside, I have this script, let me take the process through to completion. So like, let me find an artist and get it drawn, get it colored. And I was like, you know, and I'll see like what it's like. And maybe this is the only one I'll ever do, but you know, at least I could say like, I really tried to do it, you know? So I found an artist on a forum online and we talked. His name was Jason Baruti. Sent him the pages. He drew the book up. I mean, it was just like a 5-page story. So like he drew the story up and the art started coming in and I was like, I was like hooked. So
Inside my head.
I saw it. I was like, oh, that was in my head. Now I'm seeing it on the page. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I can't believe it. So, you know, I took it through the process, got it colored, got it lettered, did that again, like 2 or 3 times. And then when I had like 3 or 4 stories, I kind of I just printed like a small book, like I think it was like 16 pages. It was Gutter Magic, because it was like all kind of 3 stories set in the same universe with like kind of like overlapping characters. And I just, you know, New York Comic Con was coming up. So I just went there. I printed out, I think, like 30 of them or something. Without like, not like really looking to sell them. I just kind of wanted to, you know, meet other creators and just sort of just say, hey, look, like I'm doing it too. And this is what I'm doing, you know? So that was where I met the guys from Comics Tribe. And it wasn't at that convention, but a couple of conventions later, I met Alex, because Alex was doing a book with my friend John Lees, who does books with Comics Tribe. And, you know, we just started talking, and I loved Alex's work. And by that point, I had like gone on to do like a few more comics. I put out a Gutter, I took Gutter Magic and expanded it into like a 4-issue series that got published by IDW. I was working on a book called Wailing Blade with my friend Joe Mulvey at Comics Tribe. And so Alex and I, we would be hanging out, and then had this idea for a book called Road of Bones, and showed it to Alex, and just, you know, kind of very briefly. It's a horror book set. It's about these three prisoners who are escaping the Siberian Gulag in like the 1950s. And they kind of get stuck out in the middle of the Siberian wilderness, excuse me, with supernatural goings on. But, you know, there's also some other kind of like intrigue, because they're prisoners, not exactly really nice people. So I don't want to spoil it for anybody if you want to read it, but it was our first book together. And from there, it was just kind of, you know, off to the races, because I think Road of Bones came out really well. And then we did Sea of Sorrows, and now we're doing Breath of Shadows.
Nice. Ooh. So it's all three word things. That's the rule. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's something of something.
Something of something. That's cool. That's amazing. Wow, that's great. I see, and I love it. I love that, you know, you to do this job, you're always like, oh, I want to write comics, but I also would like to eat.
Yeah.
You know, so there's always that too, but that's super cool. I mean, you know, because I'm working on a project too with somebody, same thing. It's like, written a script, he's drawn it, we're deciding what to do, you know, we're trying to put together our own little thing. The internet helps, right?
Yeah.
The internet's definitely different than it used to be. Like, you know, when I was growing up, it was like, yeah, all of that story couldn't have necessarily, there was no message board.
Yeah.
There was like, it was like, if you're not at the Chicago Con at the same time I am, I don't know that you exist. So
yeah,
you know, that's awesome. I love that story. That's great. And I love those old X-Men. I mean, that's excellent stuff. And mm-hmm. That's so cool. So Alex, you've got to top that now. What is your now let's get back in our time machine. We know how you guys met. That's
get cool. Back to the 80s.
Yeah, let's go back to the 80s. All right, back to the
I was gonna say you're saying mon ami. That's like the French I know because of Gambit.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh. Yeah, when you throw that around, I'm like, oh, that's gotta mean something.
Yeah.
And but yeah, comic books for me, really started a couple places. One was really started with the comics in the newspaper, because when I was little, my dad would get the paper all the time, and the funnies, he would always give those to me. And so Far Side, Calvin and Hobbes, Garfield, those three specifically, like, that's where everything got started. Like, the first character I learned how to draw that wasn't someone I made up was Garfield. And like Hagar the Horrible and like Mother Goose and Graham and all those guys. At the same time, when I was getting into comics, like I would get like a Batman comic every once in a blue moon. And but my brother started getting really into them, and he's 5 years older than me. So whatever he left on the floor in his bedroom, I would sneak in. Fair and game. Like,
yeah.
Well, what's this?
Yeah.
So the first
time you're shit laying around, brother.
Yeah. It's gonna exactly. Take it. So yeah. He would like end up like, yeah, you'd have this, you'd have like, yeah, wrestling books. You'd have just all like the, like, I've heard of like Nirvana, because it was like, what's this Naked Baby album? Like, what do you listen to here? But I remember like picking up Kraven's Last Hunt off the floor and just being like, this is what Spider-Man is. Oh my God. This is like some hardcore, like that lady's dead. She got eaten in the sewers and there's rats all over her bones. And the part where he shoots, blows his head off. My mother actually censored it. She ripped out those pages. I didn't know what happened to Kraven. But until I saw Tom McFarlane, the Spider-Man, and like that shot where he's got the big hole in his head, And I was like, oh my God, he blew his brains out. That's what happened. But anyway, so yeah, so so at summertime, that's when I really went out and got comics, because like Rich was saying, like you could actually go, like we would go to the newsstand where my dad would buy papers and they would have like a comic book rack. And that was like, you know, Batman was in the movie theaters and all that stuff. So I was super into Batman. So anything Batman I bought. And then I, you know, dug X-Men. But I kind of, the thing is, I never read any of these when I was a kid. Like I would buy them and I would just look at the artwork. And I would like read a passage here or there. But, and I'm sure Rich loves hearing that as a writer. Like, nah, I never read these things. But I was like,
I assume you're reading his scripts in order to draw them.
Oh, so, yeah, yeah. I wing it.
I don't even write scripts. I just sort of like, I'm like, Alex, just do your thing. And yeah,
we'll figure it out later. So what I would, I lost my train of thought. But yeah, so every summer I would, yeah.
You said you weren't reading them. You were just looking at the pictures.
Oh yeah, that's right. So I was, and I figured if you can't with this type of medium, if I can't follow a story with looking at the pictures, then you did it wrong. That's your problem. And, but yeah, so I just, I loved all these books. And then, right around middle school, high school, I started kind of getting out of them. And what happened was I was always an art. I was always a kid drawing the back of the class. And like, it's so like old, like notebooks from like fifth grade, still with like Wolverine and fighting Juggernaut with Gambit throwing cards and like Batman.
That's awesome. That's everything,
right? And, but yeah, so like high school, I kind of got out of it, but I was into like, I was just getting into other art forms and all that. Go to art college, and like, study fine arts and realize I'm not smart enough for this. And then I move over to photography. I said, that's great. But like it was all right, but somebody told me, hey, your illustrations are better, you should go that route. I said, fine. Did illustration for a little while. But then I got really into animation and figured, all right, that's what I'll do. I'll make cartoons and that'll be my life. So I get out of college, and I can't get a job anywhere. Like I this is like 2008, and every English speaking company I contacted, I got like a job at two places, but both places like closed shop pretty quick. And so I started making my own cartoons and putting them into festivals. And like, you know, I got like an award here, there, I got, you know, people liked it, but it was all pay to play. And I was like, I can't make a living off this. And I was trying to think of what to do next. And it kind of dawned on me like, all right, you know, the storyboard part, that was the most fun of this entire thing. Maybe try give comics a shot. So I was thinking that at the same time, my brother, who was also trying to get me into comics anyways, thinking like, you know, forget all this other stuff, do this. And basically because he was getting in, collecting them again. And I think he wanted like an in on Comic Cons.
Yeah.
And
I was like, oh, like, I got a pass. Which is what we do now.
Yeah. It has a happy ending. But he was like, you know, this is what you should be doing. And there's a shop in Lowell, Massachusetts, which is Larry's Comics. And he was having... Jim Zub.
So Jim Zub and Jim Rugg had a baby. That's who that is. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But he was doing an event there because his book Skull Kickers was out, and it was and he was doing a thing there for, he was telling people to bring in some drawings, and my brother told me this, and I said, all right, I'll whip up something, and just to be able to meet somebody in the business, right? Or just even say hello, hey, I drew this, and whatever. So I go there, I give him the drawing, and I said, hey, I'm looking forward to the book. Yeah, I drew this. And he's like, oh, that's great. And then there was like a little party there that night, and it was fun. But what I didn't know is it was actually a competition for like trying to put up a pinup in the back of the book, and I won. And yes. I was like, oh, terrific. Yes. And so Skull Kickers number 5, it was the first time I kind of was put in a book. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm so happy about it. Then I was at a comic book shop, and Enrica Jang was there, who is from Red Style of Media. And she was about to put together she had a book called Azteca. But she was about to put together an anthology called Poe Twisted, where it was all these Edgar Allan Poe stories, and you kind of mix them up and have some fun. And I said, oh, well, I'm a image published artist here, and not saying that I got in like the back of like with
some facts are facts, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, they published my work and kind of built myself up a little more than I was. And she's like, "Oh wow, great! Here we're doing this anthology. Here's a story you can do." I was like, "Oh great!" And so I wrote her story that was in there, and I drew another story that was in there, and that kind of snowballed into like another job over here, another job over there. And I started working with friends at Bliss on Tap, and we did a book called Future Proof and a bunch of other books like that. I play the bad guy, and then at the same time, I met Tyler at Comics Tribe, and you know, got to know him. And what I think I did a cover for him for Red 10, and I did like a cover for number 2 of Oxymoron, who was this kind of character he had where it was kind of like a super villain who's obsessed with oxymoron, so he goes killing people and stuff like that. And and he was like, "Listen, we're doing they did the anthology first, and I did a story with I feel like a jerk.
I can run upstairs.
It wasn't Ryan Lindsay. It was I'm skipping his name. I feel terrible. That's the writer's in the letter. So So I did a story with that. Then John Lees and I did a book, Oxymoron, together, and I got to be friends with John, all the guys in there. That's where I met Rich, going to New York. We would always see each other. Rich had Road of Bones. I said, "This is the greatest thing I've ever heard. Let's do it." We did Road of Bones, and then we did Sea of Sorrows, and now we're doing Breath of Shadows. And there you go. You're all caught up.
Nice. Yeah. I love that. I love it all. No, that's amazing.
From both angles.
No, and it's good to hear, just because you don't know how things happen. And it is, a lot of times it's the accidental thing. You bump into somebody and you know somebody over here. And you know, you'd have the best story in the world, but you didn't get, you know, didn't get the right artist, or you didn't meet the right person, or you were sick that day or whatever. So it is really cool to hear the way people, and a lot of the people, when I have creators on, a lot of them say, "Oh, I was at a con and I bumped into this person," or I knew this person. I was friends with this artist, and I didn't realize that my friend, the artist, was friends with this writer over here because he was friends with her, and and then all of a sudden we're making comics forever, which is good. So you guys, this is your third comic together. So clearly you don't hate each other. Mm-hmm. So before we get into what Breath of Shadows is, which I'm totally dig, I've only read the first issue. What is it? Let's, you know, because we're saying nice things about each other here. So what is it? How is it that you guys think you work well together? Like, we'll get a little, we don't want to get super processy and nerdy. Now, you were kind of joking, Rich, where you're like, "I don't give a script. I'm just like Alex." Obviously, if it was like Alex Do Whatever, it would be written and drawn by Alex Cormack, but that's obviously not the case. So what's the process? Like I've met, we talked about those Spinnerax, Alex. I interviewed Cullen Bunn on here, and his house, like he's in his house, like we're all on Zoom, and you know, I don't show this part to everybody. Cullen's house, he's got a Spinnerax, he's got like a whole comic shop in his office. Yeah. It's the craziest thing. He's like, "I just collect all these Spinnerax. If I find them, I buy them, and then I just put all my comics in them." So it's like his office looks like an old school comic shop. It's crazy.
That's great.
But his scripts, like when he, you know, the stuff that he was doing for Harrow County, because they had worked together so much, it was really vague. It was always just like, yeah. Tyler Do Whatever, you know. So are you guys, wasn't the place when they first started, but now it's kind of like, you know, Cullen can just shorthand with Tyler. So you guys are in your third book now. So what has that process been from book one to book three working together? How collaborative is it? How much is it as Rich is like, "Nope, I need it to be 6 panels, or I need it to be 3 panels"? Like what's
Rich, your process like that? Like each script is like, yeah, it'll be like, we have 6 panels, you know, yeah, whatever happens in this panel, like guy walks into a room in this panel, panel 2, there's another guy, we see him sitting there, panel 3, like they get up, and panel 4, he punches him in the mouth or whatever. But yeah, no, it's specific what he's writing in there. But once in a while, there's a line that I liked in the script that I'm working on now, and it's not a spoiler or anything, but Rich just wrote down, "Yeah, Alex, just do one of those creepy smiles that, yeah, you know."
That's amazing.
Like, all right, perfect. Yeah, this is easy.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get specific in the script, but it's all just in the, like, kind of in the interest of just making it as easy as possible for Alex to do what he does best. You know, I'm never like, I'm never a stickler or like, you know, dictator where like, you know, it has to be 6 panels, because if Alex is a storyteller, so it's like, you know, if he feels like 5 panels is better, then the page is going to be five panels. You know, like I have no problem with him changing stuff up. Just, you know, like we just kind of talk it through. I think, like, you know, like one of the things that I love about making comics is just that it is like very collaborative. It's not just like, you know, like what I try to do with my panel descriptions is less like dictating like, oh, this has to be, you know, from such and such angle and we have to see this and that. It's like what I'm really trying to get across to Alex is just like, this is the information that needs to come across in this panel. Like we're looking at this character. We need to see on his face that he's like angry or that he's conflicted or that he's, you know, getting eaten by a giant spider.
Like, that happens.
whatever it is, it's like, my goal is just to like, kind of like, I'm less concerned with like, you know, how Alex feels is the best way to render it. And just that, like, he, you know, understands what I'm asking him to render. So I like, you know, I hope, Alex, that you never feel like constrained by what I write, because it's really just like, I'm just trying to give you the tools to like, kind of work the magic that you work, you know. It's never like, you gotta do that. But, you know, but they definitely, like, I think as we've worked together, I think like one of the things I love about working with Alex is that, like, you know, so we're doing like horror. So a lot of it is, you know, kind of gory and gross and stuff. And kind of, I feel like what our process has become is it's like, I'll write something that I think is going to freak Alex out and make him kind of like borderline upset to draw. And then he'll draw it, but to like one up me and get me back for that is like, he'll make it so gross that like, I look at it and I'm like,
especially this
you're a sick man, you know, and it's just that kind of like a constant kind of like escalation, like, you know, keep trying to like one up each other, that just takes the stories to kind of, you know, new heights, because we're, you know, we're both kind of doing it not to like, you know, not to be like, oh, this is my vision in the script and this is my vision in the art. It's like, we're both just trying to like make the book the best it can be. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, like, Rich, I mean, he never has like, yeah, the angle has to be exactly on the floor and we need to see this much, or like, you know, I want like high end angle or like anything like that. It's just, this is what the scene is. And, but, which is great, because then I'd be like, oh, well, I can play around. They're like, all right, what if we like, what if we're looking at this viewpoint, or like, all right, who's like kind of controlling this conversation or whatever, and get a angle on them that kind of makes them look like, all right, this could, you know, the obvious tricks and illustration and all that. And, but yeah, it's just so much fun, because then you'll kind of, all right, this is a scene. How am I going to shoot it? And, but yeah, and as Rich was saying, yeah, this book, there's been a lot of, a lot of bugs and
creepy things that may or may not be there.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing is, when I started this, like drawing it out, like even just concept art type of stuff, I was like, for example, centipedes. I was like, every time I drew it, it just looked like a snake with like legs. I wasn't getting it right. I couldn't figure it. Like, I'm like, what am I doing wrong here? So, but I was working from my imagination. I'm like, all right, I got to look up centipedes. And I hate it. I hate looking at them every time. And like, it's one of those, like, I'll go on Google Images and I'll click on it. It might be a GIF, and all of a sudden they jump out of me. I'm like, oh, rah. So I was very happy to hear that, it's bugging. I'm creeping them out too.
Yeah. Well, it is really creepy. Well, the reason I asked about your process and the panels and stuff is because when everybody gets their hands on this book, page one is broken panels. And I loved it. So it's like, oh, this is what I'm in for. Like you right, get it. And it's not, this is not, I'm not shitting on the master. It's not a Tom King 9 panel. You know, we're not getting that. We're getting, you know what I mean? And I love the frenetic way that the panels break, they're not even on the page. They're crooked a little bit. They overlap, and then you put some of the white in the background. So it almost looks like, this is how I see it, this opening page, especially because of the way that you've shot them, as you said, Alex. Yeah. It looks like there's a bunch of pictures thrown on the floor.
Yeah.
Like that's how that first page looks. It's like, here's a bunch of photos and you just kind of thrown them on the floor. And so they're all kind of scattered around.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Cool look. And it really, that's how I feel. Like I'm watching this thing and I don't know what it is. And it is disconcerting. And yeah. It's a great way to start. Cause I'm talk about bugs. And I've said this on the show before, but I'm a big Kafka fan. And right. You know, the metamorphosis just starts out. Gregor Samsa woke one morning to find he had been turned into a giant vermin. The end. That's the book just starts. And I appreciate that you being courageous enough. It would be, and I think different hands, if you, and maybe if you guys hadn't worked together so far, a lot of people would have started this book on page 4.
Right.
And that, you know, which page 4, and again, sure. You guys will read it when you get there, which is like, there's this band and they're being dicks to each other. And, you know, there's like shorthand, there's all these gold records on the wall. So you get who they are and angry faces. And you can tell it's in the 60s. You can tell by their clothes, all this stuff. And of course, the first panel tells us the 60s. But if you'd started on page 4, a lot of books would have started on page 4. And you're like, nah, we're going to start here. And then we'll get to, and then I think that's so smart. And so that whole Kafka-esque jumping in and out of reality and not reality is what's happening. Again, we're not spoiling here. So that playing with reality, you mentioned, Rich, that you guys are doing horror. And I think the true horror is always not knowing if it's real. It's like, if there's a monster and it's real, okay, that's scary, but that's a monster. Yeah. There's a monster. We can beat the monster or we can't beat the monster. We can hide the monster because it's real. But if we don't know if it's real, that makes it a little more scary. And so is that the intention that the reader is supposed to be a little bit unsure?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the themes that kind of runs through our horror book so far is like just the idea that, under the right circumstances, people can become as monstrous as anything like supernatural or, anything our imaginations could dream up as far as like a monster. So I think, you know, it's like to varying degrees in each three stories, but like there's definitely that, that sense of like not knowing, like, you know, how much of this is like, how much of this is real, how much of it is supernatural, and in the end, which is scarier, you know, like, is it scarier if it's this like sort of external thing, or is it scarier that, sort of this capacity for evil can live in anyone, you know? So I think that's kind of one of the things that we kick around a lot, as far as like the stories go. And they're all kind of historical stories, like set in, different time periods in the past. And I think that's another thing that we kind of touch on is that, like, in all the eras that we're talking about, that it's like eras that like have seen kind of like atrocities happen, you know, and that's another kind of aspect of like horror. There's like the horror that like, you know, individually we do as people, but also the horror that we've done as like, you know, human beings, you know? Like,
well, yeah, you picked 1968 for a reason.
Yeah.
Obviously that's not,
yeah.
For those of you who are not acquainted with your American and world history, 1968, you should become so. I mean, it was pretty, Alex, do you like doing that? Do you like the period stuff? Because like,
I love it.
Yeah. That's fun for you to do the research to give, I mean, 100%, like to do that. Like there's the shirt that the one guy's got on that is like, I still have page 4 pulled up here. Like the amount of graphic detail you put in on the flowers and shit that's going on in his shirt, that looks like he spent a lot of time on that. And that must have been a ton of fun.
You get to watch a lot of old movies, right?
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was funny because, figuring out, especially their outfits was a ton of fun. And, but like there's a part where like a group of hippies are like running around and I was just looking at like, all right, what was like at the, Macy's or whatever, JCPenney or I don't know, whatever store, like who was having a sale that summer? And I was looking through these old like fashion catalogs and stuff like that. And but in their outfit and the band's outfits, I was just like, all right, you know, it was because I mean it was all classic rock, and this is all the stuff I listened to growing up, like, you know, like everybody else. I was a big Doors fan, Jimi Hendrix, I mean Janis Joplin, everybody from that era. So I knew all these bands, and I was just like, oh, this is a piece of cake. And just like, you know, at one point he's got like, you know, like he's wearing Jimi Hendrix's shirt with like, you know, Jim Morrison's pants on, or he's got like, you know, the, yeah. And like each character, even drawing them out, I was basing them on like rock stars of the time period. And what I would do is I would think of like, okay, I'm going to make up a band of like specific people just random and sometimes that I would like to see in a band. And the trick was I thought of what they looked like, and then without looking at any reference, I would then draw that, and which is an old trick to figure out, you know, come up with characters and stories. And but I sent a bunch to Rich, and he was like, all right, these four guys. And I was like, oh, yeah, great. And
this is the man. It's like you're putting like, together, you're the mastermind. You're like, yeah,
I have like a ton of like just faces. I'm like, yeah, these could just be faces that we had to anybody. I was just monkeying around. And Rich was like, great, there's the band. Here's this guy, here's this guy, there's this guy. I'm like, oh, that's terrific. All right, let's cast. All right.
That's awesome. So you're get to
and
be
it
like
it was also like Rich was like, you can change these if you want to. I'm like, no, these are they're perfect. Let's go.
Yeah, they're called the Shades. The band is called the Shades. So it's like, yeah, my wife and kids and I will occasionally send things to each other where we're like, is that a band album or song? Like you'll hear a thing. And you'll be like, ooh, it's that thing. I was just talking to a guy, Zach Wienersmith, and his new book is coming out in a while. And I was just talking to him, and he's like, oh, and there's this thing that we drew. And it was like, he was sitting from his like sad teenage window. And I was like, oh, that's a band. Sad Teenage Window is definitely the name of a band. So I love coming up with the name of a band. And you called them the Shades, which I like that a lot because of who they are and obviously how he looks. So have like, in your mind, Rich, the Shades, like, was that the name that just came to you, or did you like go through a long list of names? Because that fits into the time frame really well.
Yeah, no, there were a bunch of names that I think we kind of kicked back and forth, but the Shades just seemed to like fit the story and like who we wanted them to be. And also just like, it sounded like, you know, when I think of like the big 60s bands, it's like it's like the Beatles or the Stone, you know, the Rolling Stones, or the, you know, the this or the Birds, the this, the that. Like it was just kind of like a, you know, like a different era, and it sounded like the Shades could like kind of fit right in, you know.
Oh, easy, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, there's that whole scene in the Commitments where they're like, it has to be the Somethings. All the greatest 60s bands are the Somethings.
Yeah.
So yeah, and so. Oh, you guys are obviously the Shades. I like it. I like that it's a band. I think it's a smart device. And of course, I because I'm an English teacher, so I'm always like, oh, it's everything is always something. So it's also because there's this lurky thing. We've had these three pages before we meet the Shades of like this dark underbelly. So there's also a shade. Like the fact that you called them that is there's stuff hiding in the dark and there's going to be shadows. And oh, by the way, creepy bugs and shit. And maybe... dead bodies or maybe mannequin bodies. I'm not 100% sure what's up there, Jimmy. Not a great guy, our lead singer. What do you like writing kind of a dick like that, Rich? How important to you was it that Jimmy be a huge dick? Like, I'm like, oh man, I feel like he's in, the, you know, I don't know. He felt like Johnny Rotten a little bit to me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was really important because it's like, you know, the kind of character that I wanted Jimmy to be was just sort of like not a bad person, but someone who just like cannot get out of his own way. Like it's like he's just like he's just like a fuck up and not a, like, you know, not a you know, not like, you know, this like perfect, like, you know, happy-go-lucky guy. And I think that's a big part of like what makes him like interesting. You know, it's that, you know, I think like, I'm not asking readers to like Jimmy, but I would love them to find him like interesting, you know. And that's like, I think more important than like him being like likable. I think if I made him likable, it wouldn't really work.
And I think the line that you used to describe him, which I think is really funny, I'm curious to know how that came into your character design, and Alex, where it says, introducing the Shades, Jimmy Meadows, lead vocalist, one of the greatest lyricists of his time. Thank you very much. So it's like, there's a way that he carries himself, right? And it's like, yeah, you said, Rich, he can't get out of his own way. And we all know those people who are like so talented and they waste it. And you're like, oh my God, if only. And it's because you can't get out of your own way, or you're, like you said, kind of a fuck up or whatever. So the fact that he's this guy, and it's not just, and that line, the thank you very much line, is the most important line to me. And I kind of see it, I think, Alex, in the way you've drawn his character, because it's not just like, meet Jimmy Meadows, one of the greatest lyricists of all time, period. It's thank you very much. So how did like those descriptions of these characters, how do they play into the way that you draw him and the way he takes up space on the page? Cause there's times, you know, everything that he's thinking and he's not talking.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there's a specific, well, I mean, it's not that, it's like page 5 or something like that. Like, where he's starting to see things and he's kind of like, I can't show that. I can't play that card. I can't let him know that I'm kind of cracking here. And right. So he's just kind of play cool and all that. And, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing, like just reading it out, it's just, you act out the, you know, what the characters are doing and just put yourself in their shoes and that type of thing. And, but it really is kind of just making them come alive, you know? And what I'll do is, I'll get up and, with the like photo booth, you know, the photo booth app on the computer. So I'll like get up and start acting it all out. So I'm like, all right, I'll sit down and I'll be like, you know, like, oh, hey, whatever. Like lean back in my chair and just like sit like an asshole and be like, eh, whatever. Trying to be cool and all that type of stuff. And then like, and I'll sit down and be like, all right, how does it look like if you're in this meeting and you're like, this guy's fucking things up. We're doing great. And he's fucking things up. And I want to smack him in the head, but you gotta be cool. And like sit there and just kind of like, and just sit there and act out each person. That's try to think awesome. Of like what they would be thinking. Like their manager's like, all right, great, guys, relax. I'll talk to them. And it's like, wait, can't these assholes get along? And, you know, it's like the guy that wants to deck him, but he's like, we have to have this guy.
You he's can the, see oh, like the rage on his arms. Yeah. Too. Like he's got his, he's like, yeah.
Right. And like, and just thinking like, you know, these guys, you know, like I'm the star and all that, but do I want to do the hassle of finding a new band? And I'll just play them along for the long. And at the same time being like, I really need to, like, when I need to go do some drugs or whatever. And but that's the job, you know. It's trying to figure out what these guys are thinking and put on the page, and then like think about what the scene is saying, what Rich is trying to like, what Rich is saying in the scene, and how this act like, all right, are they kind of acting big, but we know they're like this, they're pathetic, so give them a lot of room, but have them doing a big, and there's tons of tricks like that, and that's my job.
Yeah, well, and you're doing it. And I do want to talk about Justin's letters for just a second, but I feel like I've just kind of danced around it for everybody. So yes, there's a band and there's drugs and there's bugs. And then there's a trip. There's a trip into the jungle later. And what an ending to the end of book one. So again, all I can say to everybody is it's a horror book set in the very real world. And I think, and again, the beautiful thing about it is because you're making us be unsure. Is it drugs? Is he hallucinating? There's a couple of really good shots of reality and this bug world kind of crossing over. I like that you've kind of created, Rich, you've created like a legend. There's like the legend says. Did the story start with the legend says, or was that like as you were creating it, you're like, oh, of course, this is a rich asshole who can do whatever he wants. So they're going to, some rock band is going to fund an archaeological dig. That makes sense. Yeah. So which came first, the legend or the band?
Well, it was kind of inspired by like, there's, I don't know if you're familiar with the author, William S. Burroughs.
Oh, of course, sure.
He's most famous for Naked Lunch. But he also wrote a book.
And for killing his wife and getting away with it. Yeah. Also that.
Well, yeah. see, earlier in his career, probably kind of around the time that all happened, he also wrote a book called The Yage Letters, which was basically like he was addicted to heroin. And he kept hearing stories. He was in Mexico on the lam because he killed his wife. But he had heard these stories of this mystical drug called Yage, which we now know today as ayahuasca. And it was kind of at the time thought to be like a miracle cure for heroin addiction, for anything. So he kind of went in search of it and wrote these letters to, I believe, Allen Ginsberg while he was on this journey, kind of like, you know, talking about like his kind of misadventures looking for it. And then there's a second part of the book to where like the person he's writing the letters to kind of tries to follow him down. And since we're talking about like drugs here and hallucinogens, it gets very trippy. So that was kind of where I was like inspired by, like, you know, that kind of inspired just the whole idea of like somebody kind of writing a chronicle of like finding some cure and then somebody else kind of discovering this and deciding to try to follow in their footsteps. So, you know, Alex had really wanted to draw something that was like set in a jungle. And I was like, well, we're doing the 60s. The obvious jungle to go to would be Southeast Asia because Vietnam is going on, but didn't really want to do the obvious thing. So I was just trying to look for like, you know, a different way in and like a different story that could happen right around then. And weirdly enough, what it's happened, like this is like the second time it's happened with these stories where I've like found kind of like a weird historical fact that kind of lines up with like the story as it's coming together. Like with Sea of Sorrows is about looking for salvage on a submarine, on a German submarine, and it was always going to be a German submarine, but actually found one that had gone missing in the North Atlantic, and it was like, oh, okay, great. Well, that's our submarine.
That's the one we're looking for.
So it turns out that in the 60s, there was a scientific expedition into like, or archaeological expedition, I guess you would call it, where they found a previously unknown Mayan city called El Perihuaca, which is centipede water. And like, it was always going to be centipedes. Sort of, you know,
centipedes, the gift that keep on giving.
Yeah. So it so happens that this actually was discovered in the 60s, and you know, they're it's one of those places that they're still doing excavations on and stuff like that. But it was just like a nice little kind of cherry on top to be, you know, like, okay, like, you know, well, we're obviously going to be taking a lot of liberties with it, but you know,
sure,
yeah, but there's like a little kind of real history there that you can kind of dig into if you're so inclined.
That's so cool. I love that. I mean, that's always the best stuff, is that, yeah. Again, that also plays with, is this real or is this not real?
Right.
I love that. And Alex, you're coloring this too?
My wife's doing the flats and I'm doing kind of the rest of it. So we're working together on it, but
nice. Cool. I was just wondering, cause I know, cause Neil is listed as design and production. So I didn't know, but let's talk about Justin's letters, which are awesome, by the way. And again, I'm the big nerd who, when I covered Cowboy Ninja Viking on this show, we spent half an hour just talking about Clayton's letters and that, because they're that good. But he's really good. As he putting those in, like, when you're drawing it, Alex, are you thinking, where's he going to put these? Did you know him?
I'm terrible at that. I'm like, okay. I think he wants to kill me. I'm the type
that wants to kill you.
Whole
cool.
Panel and be like, well, what the hell's the letters going to go? I'm like, it's his problem.
Yeah. And was he your letterist for the other two books too? He did your letters.
Yeah,
he did. Yep.
He's no, really, really good. God.
Justin is great. Like, and also just very, like super nice guy, super easy to work with. And he just has like kind of a knack for it. Like, it's like we'll get a first draft back and there'll be maybe like four or five things, like, just, you know, and half the time it's like stuff that's like mistake on our end or something where like, oh, like this was a typo, it was supposed to be like whatever. But he does a great job of like not only you know, just rendering like letters for each panel, but also just like kind of helping the story flow and like, you know, making it like easier to follow.
And he moves you. And again, because you jump back and forth, like we've mentioned, the broken panels that you did, Alex, which I love, but you kind of keep up with that. And so when you've got like, there's a couple of panels, like there's the one in the airport where you've got the overlapping panel where it's like a little one on top, the guy's head, and you just see his tie. And the way that he puts the letters in those panels, like they don't feel squeezed in, but knowing that you're not thinking about him, which is awesome. Can't wait. I need to have him on the show so it can be called Talking Shit About Alex. Leave me some space, you asshole. But it's really good. You wouldn't know that you did that. You would think, oh, I'm going to leave this space for him, because it's just so impressive. And it's one of those things where I think the letterers never get the love they deserve. And I'm glad they have their own Eisner Award. You know, they deserve it. Yeah.
Letters are super important. It's weird because it's one of those things where they say, like, if you're noticing the lettering, that means it's probably bad, because it's supposed to be one of those things like where, like, if you do it right, you're almost not even like realizing that it's being done. But I think it's kind of like the opposite. Like I'll notice like really good lettering as opposed to like, you know, like mediocre lettering. And Justin kind of like, when I first started looking at his stuff, it really jumped out at me as like, this guy's super talented.
He really is. And I agree. I think it's true for like people who don't sit and think about comics the way that the three of us do. It is true. That is totally true. If you don't notice the letters, that's good on you. But I'm always look at all the details. That's why I asked about the coloring too, because I think it's colored so well, and the choices, like, again, this is one of my favorite last panels that I've seen in a really long time.
It's one of those things like in like movies, it's like sound engineering. Like, you might not notice, like, kind of like consciously notice that like the volume levels are changing or how it's mixed or something, but there is like a real art to it that like elevates the whole thing. And that's why there's an Oscar for like sound design.
Right. Unless it's a Christopher Nolan movie, then you're like, I don't know what the fuck anybody's saying. Turn it down, Chris. Come on. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. 100%. It is true. But that, again, that last panel, I got to say, I want to, you got room for three more. That's, I'm going to spoil that part to everybody. Dude, it's awesome. It's such a great, the look on their faces, the way they're dressed, the angry looking bellhop in the background. It's like, oh my God, it's so good. I'm like, oh, now I got to wait. I got to wait. Because this book isn't even out yet. I got the arc, so I got to wait to buy issue 2 sometime in March. Very cool. Well-paced. Was that always there? Did you always know your final page is going to be just one panel? Or was that something that you were like, oh, this is, like, in the process of doing that, you figured that out?
No, it was in the process, honestly, because I will say, without trying to spoil anything, that was not the plan. What happened on the last page was not the plan. It was just one of those things where I was writing it and I was like, you know what? What we wound up with made so much more sense than, and made it so much more of like a fun story than what I had originally planned. I was like, this is what we're doing. Nice. So, so it was really kind of like, one of those, I don't know, like it just kind of came to me like as I was writing in like a flash, and it was like a big moment, needed a big panel, so didn't want to crowd the page with like other unnecessary stuff.
Oh, it's so good. Alex, it's like so good. I hope you have one framed somewhere. It's so good. It's like it tells a whole story. Like if you just handed this panel to somebody, Alex, you'd be like, okay, what happened before this? What happens next? Like, you didn't know the whole story about these. There's so much going on, just the way that there's the way that he's standing and the way this guy is standing. It's really excellent storytelling in one page.
Thank you so
that
much.
Must have been a blast to draw.
It was great. And what Rich was saying, because I remember when I got the script, and I remember getting to that point, and I was like, oh, I didn't think they were coming along. Okay.
And it's so good.
It's
magnificent.
But it was I mean, like, all that stuff was it's such a fun book to draw. Like, it's just, especially it's just great. It's great.
It is great. I'm so thrilled. And again, so thank you. I'm going to say thank you here, and we'll start to wind it up. I always ask at the end, since you guys are the artists, I know this is you're the creators, it's a little bit weird, but before you plug yourselves and tell everybody where they can get this at your local comic shop, it's IDW. So you can get it. You can pre-order this now. Who's it for? Like, I always say, who's this for? Who do you give this to? Who is your, like, not who your target audience is, because as creators, you're like, we would love everybody in the world to buy one so we can retire. that's not obviously who's it for? Who in your mind when you were making this, who's it for?
I don't know. I think it's for like horror fans or like, you know, just really like people who appreciate like a story that works on like a few different levels. And I don't know like how you would like, you know, classify that as saying like, you know, a certain type of fan or whatever. But I think there's like a little bit in there. There's plenty of like gore and stuff in there for horror fans, but there's also a lot of like, you know, kind of like deeper issues I think we're exploring that I'm not saying like we have kind of the answers to anything, you know, but, you know, there's stuff in there about like, you know, humanity and psychology and addiction and stuff like that. So, so I think it's like, it's a little bit broader than just like somebody looking for like, you know, like a Friday the 13th type, like slasher.
Right. Yeah. It's you right. Cause that's well said. It is a horror book for sure, but you've definitely given it more layers than that. And I agree. I think there is this idea of, I can't wait to find out if any of this is real or if it's all just Jimmy's addiction talking and none of it's real. So it'll be fascinating to find out, and hopefully we won't find out. And then I can just be with myself at the end.
I think, you know, and if you're into like psychedelics, like mushrooms and acid and stuff like that, you're going to love the book.
You'll definitely be tripping balls.
Crazy imagery in there.
Yeah, it is.
So, horror fans and drug users is
good. Horror fans and drug users. Yes, that's the tagline. Nice. What do you think, Alex? Besides horror fans and drug users, who can you add to the list? Or you're like, that's it. Got to drop that mic right there.
I don't think I can beat. How can you beat that?
You can't really. Okay, yeah. That's totally fair. All right. So, listen, everybody. Here's the thing: you're going to go to your local comic shop, and you're going to put a hold on this. If you didn't go to your local comic shop, you can buy this digitally from IDW, or you can order it from their website. You can order. I'll put the links to all the places. Do you guys have your own plate? Like Alex, do you have your own Alex Cormack information that you want people to know about?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you can follow me on my Twitter. It's Alex Cormack 4, the number 4, because that's what it is.
Because there was enough Alex, because there were three other Alex Cormacks before you. Yeah.
What did our buddy John always says that because I killed the other three. So
that's right. Four.
But now I got to count.
Or you're a clone.
Yeah. But there on Instagram, it's just my name again, Alex Cormack. I'm sure I'm a handful of other places too. Just Google my name, Alex Cormack.
I will. I'll pop up somewhere. And I'll put links in the show notes. Everybody will click and you'll be like, you know. Perfect, but I just perfect. Like to audio learner. I want people to say it. What about you, Rich?
I'm lucky in that there's not that many RDuex out there. So I've managed to snag RDuex on pretty much every platform. So so that's RDoueK. It's a tricky name, but once you get it, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm on Twitter under that name, on Instagram. I haven't really done much with it, but I'm starting to like play around with TikTok too. And then also you can go to my website, rduek.com. I have all my projects up there. And I also have a newsletter that I send out to people. You know, it's about my work, but also I try to include stuff about freelancing and writing and stuff like that for people who are interested, because I have a lot of creators who follow me, you know, or like people who are doing indie comics or want to get into it. So I try to you know, do stuff about like my process and things like that as well.
That's so cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, people will sign up. I'm going to sign up. That's cool. All right. So thank you. This is just a pleasant surprise. Like I said, a friend of a friend, like you guys meeting each other, the same thing. So my friend, Steve J. Ray of Fantastic Universes, he got this from Laura. And then it was like, everything happened from there. And so thank you, Laura. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Alex. Everybody, listen, go buy this book. It comes out February something.
February 1st, I believe. Yeah.
February. We can't forget that. So February 1st, you guys go to your comic shop and pick this up, and it's going to be awesome. So this, you'll be hearing this now. It depends on when you're listening, I guess. Podcasts are forever, just like comic books. So when this comes out, you will have 2 weeks to go put this on hold. Cool, guys. Thank you. This was a treat. And all my links to my stuff is in the show notes. My book comes out in May. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see everybody next time.
Thank you
so much.
Where are the yesterdays, the silvery moonlit ways? Where are the lips that once belonged to me? The flame of love is low, but in the afterglow I live again. The days that used to be, green shadows fall across my heart, green shadows from a world apart, reveries, memories, lilacs in bloom have taken the gloom out of my room. Dream kisses linger tenderly. Dream lovers we shall always be. Through the haze come the days when love was new. Shadows bring dreams of you. Tenderly, dream lovers, we shall always be. Through the haze come the days when love was new. Shadows.